We now welcome in one of the premier national NBA writers in this country. He is Chris Sheridan. You can go to Chris SheridanHoops.com, that's SheridanHoops.com, and read all of Chris's coverage on this dismal, dreary NBA lockout. Chris, how are you?
I've been better. I expected common sense and cooler heads to prevail, and shame on me for thinking that logic was going to win out over greed. So, but here we are where we are, and it becomes a question now of where do the sides go from here to move the process along, because, fellas, when they walked out of the hotel the other night, they didn't look predisposed to meet again anytime soon.
Chris, I got to tell you, when I hear words, I think it was Derek Fisher who, or maybe it was Stern, which one of them said there's still a, quote, gulf between the two sides. When I hear words like gulf, that's not good.
Well, they're playing, you know, that's the rhetoric game, and they, you know, they use loaded words and big words to make things, to leave a perception in the public's eye that that may not be, you know, what the reality is. You know, you could say it's a gulf, but if they knocked half the issues that they had to knock off of their list, it's not as big of a gulf as it was before. So, you know, maybe it's a lake or a pond. Either way, there's a body of water that has to be bridged, and they're not close to doing it yet. And what happened in the last negotiating session is they were working on all these different salary cap system issues, and arguing on them and not crossing them off the list, not making progress on them. You know, if they had 30 things on the list that they had to cross out by 10 o'clock at night, they should have been down to 10, and they weren't getting anywhere near that. And after being in the room together for as many hours as they were, I guess it was about 7.5, they both sides kind of threw their hands up and said, look, we're not even making progress on what are relatively minor issues compared to the biggest issue, which is how are we going to divide up the money. And that's how how the meeting ended. And David Stern came outside and made a real strong point that we're at 47%. We're not at 50%. We've offered 47, and the players want 53. So he's already kind of backed off that informal 50-50 proposal that was thrown about. That was, I guess, a week ago Tuesday. Yeah, and now, you know, it's a question of where does it go. And I think the only thing that could really push it is the. Players early this summer filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, and they accused the owners of bargaining in bad faith. And the NLRB has been conducting an investigation and interviewing people from both sides all summer long. And the summer's over, and the mystery is, when is the NLRB going to do something? Because they're a government agency and they operate on their own timetable. But what the players have asked for is an injunction lifting the lockout and opening camps. And you know, who knows what the NLRB is going to do, but if the NLRB does side with the Players Association, then that could be the thing that pushes this forward. That being said, the owners have also filed an NLRB complaint against the players, accusing them of the same thing, along with a lawsuit. And they got it in a favorable court that's historically been favorable to businesses in labor disputes. So even if the NLRB came out and ruled on the side of the players, it would immediately go to the courtroom, and then the league would ask for an injunction allowing the lockout to be put back into place. So that's where things sort of stand. The board of governors, the NBA owners, are going to meet next week in New York. Billy Hunter is planning a trip to L.A. on Friday, and then he's going to Texas. He's going to have some regional player meetings and update guys on where things stand, but I think overall the process now begins slow, and we begin to see which side is going to be able to withstand the bleeding the most, and which side is going to be hurting the most, and that might be the thing that pushes us to the next step.
Do you believe in the notion that no matter where the negotiations were going, unless David Stern and the league got everything that they wanted, that the plan all along was, we're not going to budge no matter what we put out in the public, and we're going to miss games? That that all along, David Stern and the owners planned on, no matter what, we're going to miss games.
No, the union believes that. The union was saying afterwards that they thought the lockout was preordained. I think there was a deal there to be done the other night, but they never got around to. They spent so much. They wasted their time. Let me put it that way to you, fellas. They instead of crossing items off the list and saying, come on, we're gonna compromise both sides tonight, they dug in their heels. And take the luxury tax, for instance. They spent 2-3 hours talking about how the luxury tax would work and how much you'd have to pay, and if you went over the luxury tax in consecutive or years or 3 years in a row, then how much are you going to have to pay? And there was probably a middle ground there on that issue, like there was on the mid-level exception. The owners wanted to be starting at $3 million a year. The players wanted to start at $5 million a year. Any third grader could tell you the middle ground is $4 million a year, and they could have crossed that one off the list. And but I think what happened was the negotiations have produced so little progress to this point that the guys aren't just the guys in the room aren't used to crossing things off the list. They're used to arguing, and they argued and spent 7.5 hours not making up the ground they needed to make. And then the clock wasn't their friend anymore. It was their enemy, and it was 10 o'clock at night. And they said, "That's it. We gotta end this thing." And now we move into a whole new stage of it. And you can still save an 82-game season if a miracle happens and they get a deal done in the next 2-3 weeks. Whatever games are canceled can be rescheduled throughout the year, and then you push back the playoffs a week or two, and you play the finals in late June instead of early June. So it's still salvageable, but from talking to these guys afterwards, they weren't in a happy place where they thought that, if we spent 2-3 days together in the room, we could probably settle this thing. Both sides were pretty angry and pretty uneasy, too. They looked a little scared about what's to come, because historically in a work stoppage like this, when you pass a point of no return, which is, in this case, David Stern canceling the first 2 weeks of the season, it's very hard to get back on track and to get to where you were. And I think that's the big danger here, is that it might be another month before the guys sit down in the room together and get back to the place where they were 2 nights ago.
Chris, I want to get your opinion on this, because you are a basketball writer. You're a basketball fan. My opinion on this is that the NBA is certainly not the NFL. And if the NFL were to cancel games, America would be up in arms. I don't sense that with the NBA canceling the first 2 weeks of the season. I think the NBA is going to find out that people can get along without it. It had a great season last year, and people were looking forward to it, but people will forget pretty quickly, and they're making a monumental mistake here by thinking that they matter in some meaningful way to the American public.
Well, I agree, and I'll add this. There's a section of the American public, guys my age in their mid-40s, they grew up in their 20s and they watched the NBA all the time, and as they got into their 30s, Michael Jordan got to the end of his run with the Chicago Bulls, and then the league went into a lockout in 1998, and a lot of those guys, they just kind of stopped watching. A little bit because of the lockout, a little bit because Michael Jordan wasn't playing for the Bulls anymore. And, Bulls games were must-see TV throughout the whole decade of the 90s. Those guys just got out of the habit of watching the NBA. And once they were gone, they were gone. You stop watching a sport and then you try to turn it on 3 years later and you don't recognize anybody anymore. Everybody's changed. All the players have changed. And so these people went away and they didn't come back until the last 2-3 years, with the Celtics and Lakers meeting in the finals, and then with LeBron's decision, and then the Heat making the finals but losing to the Mavericks. So these were compelling storylines that drew a lot of old basketball fans back to the TV to watch. And there's a reason why the NBA had record attendance and great ratings and record merchandise sales last year. It's because people who hadn't been watching returned and started watching again. And I think it was incumbent on the NBA to hang on to those fans, because, those fans now are in the demographic where they're big earners and they can afford the products that are being advertised. And the NBA had them back. They had those fans back in the fold. And but those fans that can very quickly just say, you know what, if this is the way you want to approach things, I'll go back to a life without the NBA. I'll go watch college basketball, or I'll take my kids bowling, or I don't need the NBA. And And that's the real danger here, is that the Fairweather fans are going to turn their backs and they're going to be gone for another 2 or 3 years. And the rule of thumb is when you go into a work stoppage, it takes you 5 years to get back to where you were before. And I don't think the NBA is in a place where they need to be doing that when they have so many big stars all in the prime of their careers, and they've drawn so many Fairweather fans back. And I think that's, to use your word, Mike, you know, that's where the monumental mistake is. The hardcore fans will always watch the NBA, and they'll, you know, even if it's a 50-game season, they'll still watch as many games as they can. It's the Fairweather fans you got to worry about, and these are the people that you, if you infuriate, they can stick to their guns and not come back, and that's the big danger.
Final 30 seconds. Will the owners budge anymore from where their deal is at right now, or is this is a take-it-or-leave-it offer at this point from them?
I think both sides have to budge on all the issues, and I still think the deal is there to be made where the players are getting about 51% and the owners are getting about 49%. The owners would love to have a 50-50 deal. They'd love to, but if Billy Hunter puts a 50-50 deal up for a vote, the players might not ratify it, and then he'd be out of a job, and they'd be back to square one. And there's too much pressure on him to hold the line at 53, which is what the players are asking for now, down from 57. So, but look, in order to get a deal, you're going to have budge from both sides. It's a question of when is that going to happen.
He is one of the premier national NBA writers in the country. His name is Chris Sheridan. You can read all of Chris's stuff at SheridanHoops.com. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me on.